What's going on, guys? I want to apologize for the audio on this episode. I don't really know what happened, but some things got really out of whack on the settings, and I still want to try to get some content out to keep ahead on my time schedule, so I'm going to go ahead and publish this one, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you guys right now that the audio isn't the greatest, and if you don't want to listen to the full episode, I understand it's kind of just a story from hunting season last year that's really just kind of, like I said, just a filler episode anyway, so there's nothing to really miss here if you don't want to listen to it because of the bad audio. If you guys continue to listen, I appreciate you listening and enjoy the show.
Now I grew up down an old dirt road in a town you wouldn't know. I still live in the sticks where you wouldn't go. In a town of 1200 off an old dirt road. Boy, is all I'll ever be.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Shooter's Apprentice podcast. Pull up a chair and let's hang out for a bit. So, like I mentioned in the last episode, I originally wrote the script for this episode last fall, and I recorded it twice last fall. And the first time I messed up with some settings, and the audio was absolutely terrible. And the second time I re-recorded it, and I never got around to editing it with the ownership dispute with the podcast and all that. And then somehow I lost the audio file. I don't know what happened with there, but it's not in any of my GarageBand stuff. So I was just going to scrap this episode, but there was still some good content, even if the events talked about in the episode are a few months old, and it will help me get the ball rolling with trying to get new episodes out, and it will finally put me a week ahead right off the bat. So I'm going to go ahead and try to edit the script for this episode a bit to kind of fit in with more recent events, but remember that this was originally it was originally written to follow up the Arisaka episode I put out last fall. And I am recording this one back-to-back with the reboot episode, which will put me a week ahead, like I said. I literally just, you know, switched over to another recording screen, opened up the notes for this episode, and started recording. I haven't even gotten up from my chair from this episode and last week's episode. And it will finally put me a week ahead. I've never been been a week ahead before, so we're going to go ahead and do this. I apologize in advance for this episode being kind of just a filler episode. But like I said, I'm just trying to get the ball rolling here, and then once I have some content going out again, I can start focusing on researching and getting some good longer, you know, 45 minute to an hour episodes out for you guys. So anyway, all that being said, this episode is going to be a little bit different since I don't really have a gun or a shooting topic this week. I'm just going to tell a story from a hunting trip I went on last fall and do a gear review. And like I said, this is just me trying to get an episode ahead so that way we don't have big gaps in content if I can't record during the week. Ideally, I'd like to be 2 weeks ahead with recording because that gives me a decent buffer if I can't get an episode out. But it also keeps the timeline of new episodes relevant since things change so fast where I am. It won't really matter for the people who go back and listen to the back catalog of episodes, but for the people who listen, you know, every week as the episodes come out, it's really nice to have it close to the time frame the stories are from to kind of keep the timeline more relevant. Also, before we move on, I was thinking about this all winter after the last episode dropped, and I had mentioned that in the Arisaka episode that 303 British could be modified to shoot in the 7.7 Jap rifles, and I realized that I wasn't really completely clear, and it shouldn't be done. It could be done. I talked about the Japanese general who hid out in the Philippines for 20 years after the end of World War II, and he was shooting repurposed 303 British. But you guys shouldn't be doing this. While the 303 British is the cartridge they're designed for the 7.7 Jap with, it is substantially skinnier, and it's not a good idea to shoot that ammo from the rifle, even though it would work in theory. Same thing with shooting 308. It will work, but it just don't do it. It's not a good idea. And that's kind of been bothering me all winter. You know, I like to put good information out with this show. And that was kind of just for educational purposes that I had mentioned that. But I wasn't clear on the fact that you should not do that. Also, on the Arasaka episode, I know this is like 4, 5, 6 months later, and it's not really relevant anymore, but I had mentioned that I thought the Type 38 and the Type 99 actions were the same, and while this is basically true, there are some differences, and I found out that the easy way to tell them apart is the Type 38 will have, the earlier one, will have two gas ports on the top of the receiver, while the later Type 99 only has one gas port. And this is the easiest way to tell which action it is if you're looking at a sporterized rifle or one that had been rebored or rebarreled or whatever. And then just one more thing before we move on. I had been talking with another gentleman back right after that episode, and I had mentioned in the show that some of these rifles had been converted to 30-06, and I wasn't sure if they'd been properly the barrels had been set back to properly rechamber them or what. And this guy showed me some pictures of his Type 99 that was one of the ones converted to 30-06 for use in the Korean War. And his rifle had actually been rebarreled and had the proper 308 groove diameter for the 30-06. So I guess I was wrong about them just running a chamber reamer into them to be able to shoot 30-06. So, you know, you guys learn something new every day. I learn new stuff every day. Okay, let's talk about this episode's cigar. I'm just finished a cigar for the last episode, and I'm just turned around and lit another one up. And I also want to talk about a couple of cutters that I picked up over the winter. So today we are smoking, or I guess it's still the same day, but right now we're going to be smoking the Grey Cliff 10-year vintage Maduro. I bought a box of these last summer on sale from Cigars International, and I think this is the fourth one I have smoked out of that box. This cigar uses a Connecticut broadleaf Maduro wrapper with a long filler from Nicaragua and Honduras. And I'm not usually much for the flavor notes, but this cigar gives off some really lovely cedar flavor notes, and it has a nice, smooth, and mild cigar. The ones I bought are the Pirate Torpedoes, which is a 6.5-inch by 54 ring gauge. And the price for a box of 15 cigars on Cigars International is $263.99, or $17.59 per stick. So it is not a cheap cigar, but it's a really good cigar, and it's got a little bit of a peppery kick. It's a really good cigar. I don't know that I'd ever pay that much for them. I know I didn't pay that much for them on sale, but it is a good cigar. I'm really enjoying this stick. Now, let's go ahead and talk about the cutters. I know not everybody likes the cigar segment of the show, but I've gotten a lot more positive feedback on it than I have negative. And I usually try to keep this section short and to the point, but I wanted to talk about these new cutters I got. So the first cutter I bought was actually a Zykar V cutter. My buddy Joel has an older one of these that he'd gotten when he was in Iraq or overseas. So I think it was Iraq. And he carries and uses it all the time. It's his favorite cutter. And the last time I went to the cigar shop there in Fairbanks, of course, this was when I wrote the script for this originally. I just picked this up. I've had it for several months now. But they had these at the cigar shop up there in Fairbanks. And it being a small one-owner shop, I usually try to support them. So I went ahead and bought that Zykar V cutter from them. And all I've really used since I started smoking cigars was like the cheap Golentin cutters, or sometimes I'd use my pocket knife. But the cheap silver stainless Golentin cutters I had two of them, one that stayed in my pickup and the other one I carried in my pocket all the time. And while they work, both of them are starting to get pretty dull, and they're pretty crude. They're a little hard on the hands they use, but they work, you know. A lot of times I used to use my teeth quite a bit to kind of nibble the cap off the cigar. I don't really do that anymore now with these nicer cutters. And you know, when I first started smoking, I actually used a 223 case that I had sharpened the mouth on as a punch. But anyway, I decided that it was time to get a nice cutter, and the Zykar is indeed, it's a really nice cutter. The V cutter has very nice sharp edges and leaves most of the cap intact when you cut, which is, you know, it keeps the cigar from unraveling. It's spring loaded, so when you press the lock buttons on both sides, the cutter shoots out, and then you just press your cigar into it and close the cutter for a really nice clean V cut. It works really well. I really like it. And nowadays, I actually use this one the most when I'm driving truck. It just kind of lives in the cup holder on my Peterbilt, along with a lighter. And whenever I light up a cigar in the semi, this is the first cutter I grab. However, I smoke a lot of torpedoes, and at the time, I didn't really think that the V cutter would work very good on torpedoes. It turns out it does. It works really good for cutting torpedoes as well. But I was earlier on in the winter when I first got that cutter, I wasn't really sure about that. And then also, I like to trim the ash off of a cigar. If I let a cigar go out and then I relight it, I like to cut the ash off first. Just so you get a little better light on them. So I went ahead and I ordered a nice Guillotine cutter as well, and I got the Colibri double Guillotine cutter. And one of the reasons I went with this cutter was because of the pass-through design for trimming the ash off. Like I said, the V cutter and a lot of the other cutters out there have a backer that the cigar sits against as you cut it to keep you from cutting too much off of the cap. But the cheap cutters I used to use, they didn't use this. That, you know, you can just put a cigar all the way through them, and I've come to like that style since I like to, like I said, I like to trim the ash off of my cigar before I relight it. So the Colibri, it's a nice cutter, it locks closed, and it springs open. It's got a little single button in the front, you just kind of pull down, and it springs open, and it can handle up to a 62 ring gauge cigar, which is cool, because I smoke a lot of large ring gauge cigars. I prefer a nice fat cigar, and it's really nice, thin, compact. It carries really well in your pocket, and this is actually the one that lives in my pocket now. The old cheap Guillotine cutter has been replaced with this Colibri cutter, and I really like it as a daily carry cutter. So both these cutters I like really well. I would recommend both of them. Okay, guys, story time. Like I said, this episode is going to be just a little bit different, and that's okay. As much as I like to do this podcast for the sake of learning new things and sharing what I learned with you guys, I also just like telling stories sometimes, so that's more what this episode is going to be. So remember that this episode took place last fall. The original timestamp on the script was November 15th, and I had mentioned having this outing the day before. So this story took place around November 14th of last year, of 2023. So like I said, I don't really know the term I'm looking for, but the time, it not being a recent story, and having being an older script, that might kind of read a little bit weird. But we're just going to go ahead and roll with it. So I do remember it was a pretty nice day, and I got a bunch, after getting done with the chores I had to get done, I decided it was just way too nice of a day to stay at home. The temp was up around 22 degrees. So I decided to grab a couple guns and get out of the house for the afternoon. I always talk about going out and do more hunting and trapping and stuff like that, but I just never seem to make the time to go do it. So I went ahead and went out that day. I grabbed my Tika 6.5 Creedmoor and my Super Wrangler, a pair of snowshoes, and some other gear, and headed out to goof off for a couple of hours. My plan was at first to make a stop at Donnelly Dome, which was about 15 miles south of my house. When I was a kid, we used to go hunting snowshoe hares out there all the time. You could easily shoot 25 or 30 in an outing. In fact, back then the rabbits were so thick in that area that you couldn't really drive through the area without running one over. When we moved back up here to Alaska in 2019, I went out there. I couldn't even find any rabbit tracks. We've had a really high predator population the last couple of years, and it's been really hard on the small game. So the plan was to hike up to the base of the hill and then get a little bit of elevation. If I saw some small game in range of the pistol on the way, cool. If not, once I got where I wanted to be, I would set up my Fox Pro and do some calling and see if anything came in. So I hiked in, for about 45 minutes and found a good spot to set up and call. Got this call set up, got myself a spot to sit, flipped on the switch, and nothing. The batteries were dead. And at this moment, my mind races to a time about an hour before when I had stopped at the hardware store on my way out to go calling to get some spare AA batteries in case the ones in the call were dead. And in my mind, I could very clearly see the brand new pack of batteries sitting in the cup holder of my truck, where they did me absolutely no good, after I'd hiked for 45 minutes. So, it's still nice to be out of the house. Let's go on back to the truck and go check out another spot about 10 miles further up the road. So the next spot is another spot where I'd really been wanting to check out for a while as a potential area to run a trap line. I don't own a snow machine, and I don't have an extra 10 grand to go out and buy a new one. You know, used ones up here for the kind of machine I want bring stupid money, and it's a very expensive machine. I just don't have that kind of extra cash right now. So if I ever do start trapping again, it will be on snowshoes. I didn't do any this winter because I just got way too busy with stuff, but we'll see how next winter goes. So this spot has lots of small game sign. As I hiked in along this little creek, I saw several sets of fox and coyote tracks, as well as a set of wolf tracks. So I get back in, you know, about as far as I feel like going since it's just about dark, and decided to set up the call and give it another try before heading back to the house, or back to the truck. So I set the call down, and I hike up to the top of a small hill about 250 yards away and get set up. I press the play button on the call, and nothing. Try different sounds, try muting, unmuting, nothing. All right, you know what, screw it. I guess I'm done. So I kept trying the call controller as I hiked back to the speaker unit just in case, you know, just to see if I'd been out of range or something. It just wasn't making any noise. So when I get down to the speaker, and when I picked it up, I realized that somehow I had flipped over the switch on it to external speaker, and that's why I wasn't playing it anymore. You know, I flipped it back to microphone, and it started working just fine. So, you know, learning, you know, things you got to check, you know, before you head out there, and I didn't check it. So, you know, it was dark by then, so I just went ahead and headed back out to the truck. So, now, I tell you guys this story as a reminder to myself to be better prepared. And I was out later in the day, and I was in a hurry, and everything could have been avoided if I had just taken a few extra minutes to check over my gear. You know, it had been a while since I had done anything like this, gotten out of the house to go hunting or shooting or whatever. So I was excited to go out, and I let my haste get the better of me. Luckily, you know, it just kind of spoiled my afternoon, and I didn't get to do any calling. But, you know, if I'd been in a bad situation and I needed survival gear or whatever else, and I hadn't checked my gear over to make sure everything was where it needed to be, it could have been, you know, disastrous up here in Alaska. You know, when you need your gear, you need it to be ready to go. Another thing that could have saved that particular outing was having a set of backup calls. You know, I have a lanyard with several decent mouth calls on it somewhere. However, when I cleaned out my last truck to sell it, those calls went into a box of stuff that came out of that truck, because when I sold it, it was just kind of a last minute, oh, I'm going to sell this truck today kind of thing, and I cleaned the truck out, put everything in a box, and that lanyard full of calls went into that box of stuff, and that box seems to have been abducted by aliens. You know, even now, 6 months after I wrote this script, I still have not seen that box anywhere. I don't know where it went, and those calls are just gone along with that box. You know, and if I had those calls that afternoon with me, you know, I could have easily just switched gears and started mouth calling, and you know, I'd be able to still be able to do a little bit of calling. But I didn't have them, and the electric one didn't, you know, it let me down that day. But I did order some new calls after that, and I've got another I've got a couple of lanyards now full of various calls, one in my truck and then one that stays with my binoculars and my rangefinder. I should also note that outing made me really miss my old K5 Blazer. The year before that, in last spring and summer and everything, I had used that Blazer for all kinds of adventures, and it was light and it was sure-footed in the snow. My old pickup was two-wheel drive, so I never really got off the road with it in the winter. So the Blazer really opened up where I was able to get into and shorten up my walking distance. I do have a four-wheeler, but the automatic choke on it is not dependable in the cold. And it tends to not start when you need it to sometimes. I need to find a kit to convert it to manual choke, but in the meantime, I am on foot in the winter if I want to go out and do anything. The new plow truck, which at the time was a new plow truck, I actually don't even have it anymore. I just recently sold it. But it was an F-250. It had almost no ground clearance on the front plow mount, so it was a no-go for off-highway adventures. And then, you know, it was pretty heavy with that utility bed that was on it in the plow. And then the same thing with, like, our Suburban, which was dead most of this winter. But the Suburban, you know, it does really well in the snow, but it being more of a soccer mom car, I guess, for lack of a better term, being a newer one with all the plastic on it, it sits too low to the ground, and it doesn't do very good off-road because the plastic gets ripped off of it. And I've ripped the plastic defuser off the front of it, I've knocked the back bumper off of it, it's just everything's plastic on that stupid car. So we don't really use it for off-road adventures. And then, you know, I got my Duramax now, and it does pretty good in the snow, but you know, like when I went out that day, I was able to make it in pretty far, you know, and it, even just in two-wheel drive, because I could see where other people had spun out and turned around, and I was able to keep going. But the problem with the Duramax is that it's really wide. It's a dually, so it doesn't fit down narrow trails, and then it's also black, and that black paint scratches super, super easy. And I've actually got some battle scars on it already from, you know, moose hunting and doing whatever. And with that big Duramax motor in the front, it's heavy. And like on that outing, I remember I broke through a creek that had some overflow, and I just about got hung up, but I couldn't get that big heavy back end to break back up over the ice. So it's not really the best for off-road adventures. I do really miss that old Blazer. I'd really like to try to find a nice little truck or a small SUV just for adventuring. You know, a side-by-side would really be good too. But again, those are like snow machines up here. They're $15,000 or $8,000 for a used one that's been, you know, road hard and put away wet. And I'm lazy. I like my heated cabs, and I'm also almost 7 feet tall. So I don't fit in the side-by-sides very well. So I don't know. I might start shopping for another Blazer or like an old Toyota 4Runner or something. And it is nice with the SUVs like that to be able to keep all the gear in the truck and not worry about it getting wet. All right, let's go ahead and talk about a holster I picked up here real quick for the gear review segment. It's been a while since I've done a gear review. Actually, now, since this script is old, it's been a long time since I've done a gear review. And at the time, I needed a holster for my Super Wrangler, and I just couldn't bring myself to spend over $100 for a holster from one of the usual guys, like, you know, Simply Rugged or anything. No, we're talking about a $250 pistol here. So I did some shopping around, and I ended up ordering an Azula Strongside single-action leather holster for this pistol. These guys have quite a few holster designs, and they are available pretty much from all the major sellers in the game. I ordered this one from eBay from a seller named 450 Ackley. And it ran me a grand total of $49.99 with shipping. So the description in the eBay ad and on the Azula website for this holster say that it's made from premium 9-ounce veg tanned leather right here in the good old US of A. And right off the bat, that is the first thing I noticed when I got the holster and opened up the packaging, was that there's a big maker stamp right on the back of the holster that says Made in South Africa. So right there, right off the bat, I've got a little bit of a problem or a little bit of an issue. I don't really mind buying non-USA made products, but don't tell me it's made in the United States if it's not. But that's all. That's really the only issue right there. Let's just go ahead and talk about the holster a little bit. The holster actually looks very nice. The leather is decently molded to the gun, and the stitching is really nice. It does have a hammer thong, which I don't really use hammer thongs, but it is a nice touch, and the hammer thong on this thing is super heavy duty. The belt loop is sewn on and has a tab that wraps all the way around to the front of the holster, which I like, but they should have wrapped it all the way around the back of the holster as well instead of just stopping at the back of the belt loop. The 9-ounce leather is just a little bit thin, and it likes to fold under the trigger guard when holstering the gun in that spot right behind the belt loop, where it's only single layer on that back side of the holster. The fit to the gun is decent, but I do think that the toe of the holster should have been left open. And you know, when it's with the pistol seated into the holster about, you know, a quarter of an inch more, if it was an open toe holster, it would be possible to break the holster into the gun sat down in the holster just a little bit more. But with the stone bottom, it bottoms out in the holster, and that's just, you know, the end of the line. That's it. The belt loops are also a bit tight on my 1 3/4 inch wide Simply Rugged laminated belt, but it does fit on there. With a standard wide, you know, with a standard 1.5 inch belt, it wouldn't be an issue, but this is a wide, heavy-duty belt that I wear, which I highly recommend a wide, heavy-duty belt for carrying a gun on the pants. So it's a little bit tight, but it does work. Overall, it's not a bad holster. The thin leather getting behind the trigger guard could be an issue if it was for a double action or an auto loader like a Glock, especially one that doesn't have a safety. But I still think it's a better choice than something like Uncle Mike's nylon one-size-fits-all holster. I would probably buy from this brand again. However, that bit about the location of manufacturer does bother me just a little bit. I do plan on doing a YouTube video review on this holster in the next couple of days. So keep an eye out on the YouTube channel for that video. We'll see if that actually happens or not. Again, I wrote this script several months ago, and I'm not even 100% sure where that holster is right now. I was looking for it here the last couple of days, and it seems to have been misplaced somewhere. All right, everybody. Well, that does it for this week. Be sure to go follow me on your favorite social media platform. I am fairly active on both Facebook and Instagram, but I can also be found most other places. The Shooter's Apprentice on YouTube, TikTok, pretty much all of them. Just look for The Shooter's Apprentice. And like I mentioned in the last episode, we got The Shooter's Apprentice Network, a Facebook group now where you guys can join in and interact and have conversations with me and other listeners about the show or whatever other topics you guys want to talk about. As always, if you guys have any comments or questions about the show or anything else, feel free to email me at dansgunstuff@gmail.com. You can also message the Facebook page, which is listed as the Shooter's Apprentice Podcast. All that being said, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this one up. Hopefully, following this week, I'll be able to get... I'm not 100% sure what my next topic will be, but I'm hoping to get back into those 45-minute to an hour-long episodes. But like I said, these first two, trying to get fired back up. I'm trying to record two of them back-to-back, so they're going to be a little bit shorter episodes. But all that being said, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and get this one wrapped up. Thanks again for spending time with me. Until next time, stay safe out there, and don't shoot yourself in the foot.
Can't stand to hear the same old song, and I don't leave the highway long enough to bog down in the mud, 'cause I've got rambling fever in my blood. I caught this rambling fever.